Hello, my name's Tom Boone.
And I'm Joanna Bailey.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Simple Flying Podcast, where we'll give you the lowdown on the latest news from the world of commercial aviation. Here's what we've got for you this week.
Coming up today, Tom will look at some huge news with Lufthansa, while I take a look at why an airline has been weighing passengers before their flight.
I will see which Airbus A380 is heading back to Auckland later this year, while Joe explains why pigs really do fly.
Finally, Tom will explore the Lisa that just bought 13 aircraft from Avalon.
So now you know what's in store, let's get on with the show. And I really wanted to start with some huge news that actually came out, I think, about 10 minutes after we finished recording last week's podcast. So it's a week old now, but it's still really important. And that is that the German flag carrier Lufthansa has finally purchased a stake or agreed to purchase a stake in ITA Airways. So what's the news? It's going to take 41% of ITA for the time being, and this is going to be acquired through a capital increase of 325 million euros. For our US listeners, that's $348 million. But, you know, as I said, it's only taking 41% right now, but it does have the option to purchase ITA outright at a later date. And it's quite fun to finally see this story wrapping up, because we've had rumors of ITA and Lufthansa. I mean, the Lufthansa rumors with ITA have gone back to the Alitalia days. I think we've been running stories since 2019. And, you know, Lufthansa, it wasn't secret that they were interested in this, because there was a whole bidding process for ITA, and actually Lufthansa, you know, was one of the first people to bid for it with the MSC group, and they were competing against Air France KLM. But, you know, actually it was funny because Italy chose Air France KLM as the preferred option, and they got some exclusive negotiating time, but that never worked out. And, you know, far from feeling cast out and rejected, Lufthansa threw its hat straight back in the ring when talks reopened on other levels. So now, you know, they've finally managed to get a deal done. And it's not just Lufthansa paying for this, you know. Italy is also going to pay for ITA 2.0 or whatever you want to call it. Obviously, Lufthansa's doing its 325 million capital increase, but the Italian Ministry of Economy and Finance is also committing to a capital increase of 250 million euros. I'm interested to see how that sort of plays out with the whole state aid thing, or if that even figures into it, because, you know, just the day before this deal was announced, the European Commission ruled against state aid that was given by the Italian government during COVID-19, something that made Ryanair really happy. It's quite interesting, though, because, you know, Lufthansa is getting so passionate about Italy all of a sudden. Obviously, they already have some Italian connection, because their subsidiary, Air Dolomiti, you know, that's part of Italy. And they previously said Italy was the most important market outside of its home markets and the US. Of course, now it is a home market. But, you know, it's talking about it, Spohr, Carsten Spohr said that today's agreement will lead to a win-win situation for Italy, ITA Airways and the Lufthansa Group. It's good news for Italian customers and for Europe, because a stronger ITA will invigorate competition in the Italian market. As a young company with a modern fleet and its efficient and expanding hub in Rome, ITA is the perfect fit for Lufthansa Group. So, you know, I think it's quite interesting, like how they're really all in on this. And I think the reaction has kind of been quite interesting as well, because I feel like a lot of what I've read has not been the most positive about the deal. And like, is this a mistake? Because, you know, obviously ITA has its own problems that will now kind of be absorbed by the Lufthansa Group. When I say that, though, Lufthansa has no plans to absorb ITA Airways into one of its existing airlines. Instead, the Italian airline will remain its own brand with its own management, and this means it's going to continue to operate under its current air operator certificate. However, you know, there are benefits for being part of a big airline group, such as being able to access Lufthansa's powerful marketing and revenue management tools. One thing that did really pique my interest is the whole SkyTeam Star Alliance thing, because, you know, ITA Airways, like its predecessor Alitalia, is a member of the SkyTeam Alliance. Now, if it had been bought by Air France KLM, that would have been great, because they're also in SkyTeam. But the Lufthansa group is heavily intertwined with Star Alliance. I can't see them wanting one airline in the group to be completely separate, because I can just see that causing more issues than solutions. But, you know, also you've got the whole thing of all of Star Alliance uses the miles and more frequent flyer program. So, yeah, that's kind of the sort of summary of that. I'm looking into more of this miles and more Star Alliance thing. And I've got some quotes that I still need to go through. So, yeah, watch this space. But happy to speak about Lufthansa again after a month of abstention.
Do we know when it'll all conclude? Like, if it's going through the process, is there like a date when they'll officially become part of Lufthansa's airline group?
I don't know that off the top of my head. I feel like it's a very done deal at this point, though. It will happen. Yeah. It's just a case of when.
These things just usually take some time, but I guess they'll have paid their membership for their alliance for this year. So maybe, you know, by the time that comes up for renewal, it'll be a good time to change. But I can't imagine it will maintain its standing with the other alliance.
I mean, I can't tell you exactly which airline it is. But I seem to recall that, I think it was this whole LATAM Delta thing. Do you remember that? I feel like that was the reason that LATAM sort of pulled out of Oneworld quite swiftly.
Yeah,
or so.
It was, exactly. They had to join the same alliance as their parent company. So I should imagine we'll see the same thing. I mean, it would be a real nightmare for passengers if they can, you know, fly on all of Lufthansa Group Airlines and collect miles and more, and then they can also extend to other, you know, Star Alliance carriers, and then they can't with this one airline. But, you know, I'm glad to see that it has got a buyer at last, because, you know, they need that support. And I think Lufthansa is a great choice, personally.
Yeah, well, you know my thoughts of Lufthansa.
I know. So I wanted to talk a little bit about something rather unusual that's going on at one particular airline. So, you know, when you're getting ready to go on a flight, you get to the airport, you've kind of got your mental checklist of things to do. You've put your liquids in a little plastic bag. You might get to security and take off your shoes and your belt. But did you know that one airline is making you now stand on some scales to check your weight before you board the flight? Well, you did know,
as the content manager of Simple Flying, thankfully, I do know that. But I, you know, I could talk about this quite a while, but I'll let you do it. But I think this is like there's so much history to this that I will go into afterwards if you've not mentioned it.
Definitely. Well, this is exactly what's happening to some passengers flying with a certain airline over the past few days, because Air New Zealand is currently weighing its passengers before they board their international flight. So the program is called by Air New Zealand a passenger weight survey, and they want to gather data on the weight for load and distribution plans for planes. You know, travellers are going to be asked to stand on a digital scale holding their carry-on bags when they check in for their flight. The information about their weight is then submitted to the survey, but it will not be available for the agent to view, and it will be all anonymized. So it's, you know, it's not like it suddenly flashes up on a big screen and you get really embarrassed. In all, the airline's looking to weigh 10,000 passengers between May 29th and July the 2nd in order to inform weight and balance calculations for the future. In fact, it's an unusual thing for New Zealand, because the New Zealand Civil Aviation Authority actually requires that airlines conduct weight surveys at least once every 5 years so that they can see if there have been any major changes. The last time Air New Zealand did one was in 2021, and they did that just on passenger weight for domestic flights. So it's kind of notable that now they've decided to check passenger weight on international flights. However, being weighed isn't compulsory. The airline said it really appreciates customers helping out, but it's totally optional whether people get on that scale or not. To me, that seems like it's already a flawed process, you know, because if you've overpacked your carry-on bag to be a bit overweight, or if you're a bit on the heavier side, I feel like you'd be less inclined to agree to step on the scales, whereas somebody quite light with a small carry-on might be more amenable to going on
Are they holding the carry-ons? Because my understanding was that they're... Okay, I thought they were more interested in the weight of the person. But
I think they're interested in that too, but they are asking people to hold their bags when they step on so they can get an overall picture of the amount of weight being added to the aircraft by each passenger, you know, body weight and bag weight, I guess.
I mean, to interrupt, I feel like this is the exact same thing we had when these airport scanners, where you stand and then some man in a room gets a naked picture of you. I feel like we had the same whole drama then. And, you know, now that's a normal part of flying.
It is, exactly. And, you know, it's unusual because not many airlines do it, but it actually makes sense because people are getting bigger and bags are getting heavier and weight and balance is so important for airplanes. I actually find it interesting that it's happening now and particularly that they've picked international flights to do it, because I'm sure you'll remember that when Air New Zealand launched its Auckland New York service, which is obviously one of the world's longest flights at well over 17 hours, they had a problem on the way back. So their calculations for headwinds were apparently a bit off, meaning there wasn't enough available weight required to carry the required fuel for the trip home. This led to a bit of a mess, to be honest. There were reports of baggage being offloaded in New York and not making its way to New Zealand. In some cases, even passengers were being asked to leave the aircraft and take alternative services. A few flights were actually forced to stop off in Nadi in Fiji to refuel on their way. You know, that was in the very early days, and the airlines kind of solved the problem for now by selling fewer tickets for the service so that there is this extra takeoff weight available to uplift enough fuel for the whole flight. But you know, it's not ideal from the airline's point of view. You know, at the end of the day, Air New Zealand, apparently, according to regulations, was due for a passenger weight service survey this year anyway. But it does make you wonder if there's some sort of related thing going on. Maybe they underestimated how much people would take with them going all the way to New York, or the general weight of their passengers. Not that I'm saying anything about New Zealanders and their weight, because the whole world's getting a bit fatter and we know it. But I find it all fascinating. One, that people are getting so angry about it, and two, that it's not done in more airlines. You think it would make sense for more airlines to have an overview of how people are changing over the years.
This is why it is really important, though, because if you look in the crash of Air Midwest Flight 5481 in 2003 was directly caused by this, because they said, like, oh, we've got 20 passengers, say, I don't know, it's 19 passengers, sorry. But they'd calculated the weight with an average amount for each passenger. And it turned out that actually the average amount was around 9 kilograms too light per passenger. So the plane was much heavier than had been calculated. And because of that, you know, there were 21 fatalities. So that did cause changes in the average weights that were being used. But it's it does show, you know, like to the passenger, it's like this whole CO2 coming out of an engine thing. To the passenger, they only see this, oh, I'm being weighed. They don't have the understanding that actually, if this isn't done, it's bad for everyone because planes could fall out of the sky.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a good thing. And I think, you know, in the future, maybe as part of the check-in process, we all walk over a weight sensing pad, and then that information on how much the actual passengers on that actual flight weigh gets fed to the fuel loader, and then they know more precisely how much fuel to put on. I think that would make perfect sense, and I'd have no issue with it. But the fact that people have the option not to do it also means it's kind of like a self-selected sample of people, and I'm not sure it's going to be very accurate, but maybe it'll change in the future.
Yeah, we'll see. I would step on the scale. But talking about New Zealand, lovely segue time. I wanted to talk about who is going back to Auckland with the Airbus A380 in November. And that is our favourite carrier, Singapore Airlines. I don't know why I said favourite. I don't think they're my favourite in any book. I'd love to fly with them.
It's your favourite airplane, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's favourite airplane. See, look, I've managed to do an on-topic story about Lufthansa and the A380 this week. But, you know, it's really interesting because I looked at some more than just the numbers because, you know, I like to dive into the bigger story. So Before COVID-19, Singapore Airlines was flying the 777 and the A380 to Auckland once per day per aircraft, so twice daily service. And, you know, they quickly returned to Auckland after COVID-19, but that was with the Airbus A350-900 in June 2020. Now, they also briefly brought the 777 back onto the route between October last year and March this year for the IATA winter period. But it seems like people want to go to New Zealand again, or escape New Zealand, because the A380 is now going back on the route alongside the A350. So from November 22nd until the March 30th, there's going to be two rotations a day still, one with the A350-900 and the other is going to be the Airbus A380. So you've got two choices of flights. You've got a daytime flight, SQ218 from Singapore to Auckland will take off at 8:45 in the morning and land at 11:35 at night. Or you get the option of a night flight. It is a night flight with the A380, and that would take off at 10:30 in the evening from Changi and land at 13:20 the next day in Auckland. I feel like if I had to pick, I would want the A380 for the night flight. In my experience, it's a much more comfortable aircraft. And, you know, I'm planning to go to Auckland this winter, so maybe I'll get on that. Who knows? But it's not the only A380 in town. Emirates, you know, they're also flying the A380 to Auckland. And the numbers on this really blew my mind, because at one point they were flying the A380 to Auckland four times a day, according to scheduled data from Cirium. You know, they started flying it to Auckland in February 2009. That became a daily service in May 2009, twice daily in October 2012, thrice daily in October 2013, and then even four times a day from November 2016 to July 2017. It dropped back down to once a day in April 2018, though, so I'm not really sure why. There must have been a reason for this peak of A380-ness.
Peak A380, yeah. Maybe it was pre-A350 or something.
Yeah, well, it's always pre-A350 with Emirates.
Sorry, I thought you were talking
Etihad. No, this is Emirates now. maybe I said, if I didn't say it right, who knows. But anyway, they weren't so quick to return to Auckland as Singapore Airlines, so they actually didn't go back until December 2022. And they've had a daily service to the city since, but they did the return straight away with the A380. They didn't send the 777 a bit earlier. But, you know, I'm happy to see that Singapore Airlines is putting the A380 to good use still. And, yeah, I'm really happy that my favorite plane is still flying.
And good news for people that are on that long flight, because Singapore Airlines announced this week that everybody's getting free Wi-Fi, unlimited, high speed, so no data caps, no money to pay from July the 1st. You do have to be a member of KrisFlyer, I think. You know, that's very similar to what Delta said. You know, if you're
the same with Emirates as well. Yeah. It's just, it's kind of like, you give us your data and we'll give you Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I think it's worth it for a flight of that length. And, you know, you get to get points as well, which is always good. Miles, whatever you call them. Not a huge loyalty geek here, but I'm trying. So I wanted to move on to a bit of a niche story, because there's been a bit of an uproar in the past couple of days about what actually goes into sustainable aviation fuel. Now, we know that SAF is seen as one of the kind of big, I don't know, infills, I guess, between now and when they actually start making electric or hydrogen planes that can go the distance. we know that it's made from waste products and or renewable biomass, so things like, you know, fast-growing crops or trees. But did you know that there was a lot of dead animals in SAF? I hadn't really thought about it, but apparently the fat of pigs, chicken and cattle is considered waste for the food production industry. Therefore, it meets the criteria for raw feedstock for SAF. Some calculations by the BBC I found quite fun, if a bit out there. They suggest that if you wanted to fuel an entire flight from Paris to New York with animal-based SAF, you would need 8,800 pigs for that one flight alone. You know, of course, 100% SAF flights are still a long way off yet. But if we take the EU's target of 6% of SAF by 2030, that's still quite a lot of sustainable fuel required. The EU already said that 1.2% of that 6% SAF fuel must come from e-kerosene. So if the other 4.8% was just from animal fats, that one transatlantic flight would require 400 pigs for fuel. So, you know, that's just a bit of fun, really. Nobody's fueling their SAF flights just on pigs. But it's interesting to see just how much fuel is required, you know, just to put that in a bit of context. You know, for me, having animal fats in SAF isn't really a bother. It doesn't affect my flying experience. It may be more of a concern for vegans that want to travel, I guess. But it does come with another problem that is worth considering. When we think about just how much demand there's going to be for raw feedstocks to produce SAF in the coming years, given how most of the aviation industry is looking on this as a short-term solution for its CO2 reduction, you know, there aren't enough dead animals, basically. There aren't enough animals being slaughtered to meet the demand. So there was a study that was released a couple of days ago by a Brussels-based clean transport group called Transport and Environment. They reckon that the demand for animal fats for SAF will triple by 2030. And they say that there are not enough animals to meet this demand and that producers will have to look elsewhere for SAF. The conclusion they came to is that one of the most readily available alternative sources of fat is palm oil. Now, if you know anything about palm oil, you know this is a awful product, which is in most of the things we buy in the supermarket, sadly. It's made from the fruit of trees called African oil palms, which are produced in vast plantations in tropical countries. You know, to grow these trees, it requires the clearance of thousands of acres of mature rainforest. So this is not only bad for biodiversity because it destroys habitats for some of the world's most endangered species, it also removes one of the biggest carbon stores on the planet. You know, these big old rainforest trees have locked up CO2 for us for decades, well, centuries. And quite often they're in such a hurry to plant these big palm oil plantations, they burn the rainforest trees and all that stored carbon is released into the atmosphere. There are also issues with human rights, forced labour, the displacement of indigenous forest communities. You know, the list goes on. It's not good stuff. So Transport and Environment put it out there that SAF producers would have to turn to palm oil as a readily available cheap solution to produce sustainable aviation fuel. Well, I wasn't too sure on that because I know that most sustainable fuel producers have a pretty, you know, finger on the pulse on sustainability as a whole, not just cheap and quick solutions. So I asked a couple of them for their take. World Energy, which is a big producer in the US, told us that they use a range of lipids for their SAF, all of which are RSB certified. I looked into that. RSB certification, it basically ensures ethical, sustainable and credibly sourced biomaterials. They said that means we don't use palm oil and we never will. Neste, on the other hand, which is a big company from this side of the Atlantic, they did admit that they use both cooking oil and animal fat waste to produce SAF. The exact raw materials and their shares used in production will depend on the availability, the price, the customer demand, the market requirements, but they always meet the legal sustainability requirements set by local authorities in the market that they're dealing with. You know, they view it that the more variety of sources there are for SAF feedstocks, the better or the quicker they can produce more volume, basically. So, you know, then they'll be able to offset the greenhouse gas emissions, blah, blah, blah. However, they also said they do use palm oil, but they intend to stop the use of palm oil entirely by the end of this year. So I wanted to just repeat this quote by a lady called Barbara Smalagic. That's probably not how she pronounces her name, who is a biofuels expert at Transport and Environment. She says, "It turns out pigs will fly. For years, we've been burning animal fats in cars without drivers knowing. Now they will be fueling your next flight. But that can't be sustained without depriving other sectors, which will in turn likely switch to damaging alternatives like palm oil. We need greater transparency so that consumers know what is going into their tanks and fueling their flights." My research suggests that at least for the companies I've heard from so far, and I have reached out to more, and will include that when I write this up for the site, I don't think this is necessarily true. I don't think palm oil is viewed as a potential source for SAF production in the future at all. In fact, Neste told me that they're focusing on the following promising new feedstocks. I'm going to try and pronounce this one right. Lignocellulosic raw materials. In English, that's dry plant matter. Municipal solid waste, algae and power to liquid. So no mention of palm oil there. In fact, as I said earlier, they're going to stop using palm oil entirely by the end of this year. I really think transport and environment are waving a bit of a flag at something that doesn't really need it waved. I don't think people should be turned off of SAF in this way. I don't think it should be questioned in this way. But there's my opinion piece, and I'll shut up now because I can see Tom's fallen asleep over there.
No, I think it's interesting. I understand this whole... I feel like maybe the public perception of SAF is not the real target, though, right now. I think before you start going that deep, you need to just sort out this whole CO2 offsetting system where, you know, like one airline will tell you, oh, you use this much CO2, and then another one, when you put the same flight in, gives you a totally different, you know, like if I use one booking engine, it will say €20 to offset with trees, and another one will say €2 for the exact same flight. And, you know, get all of your ducks in order there, I think, first is the sort of key thing. I wanted to wrap up briefly. I know that the time's clicking on, so I'll keep this one quick, with a new story from today about a newish lesser called Avilis, who's based out of Saudi Arabia. And I was really fortunate to chat to their CEO, Mr. Ted O'Byrne, when I was in Ras Al Khaimah earlier this year, about sort of what's coming up. And this is apparently coming up. So they announced today that they've bought 13 aircraft from Avalon, so another aircraft leaser. We don't know which what all 13 aircraft are, but I can tell you about 10 of them. It's mostly narrow body. So there's 7 Airbus A320neos, 2 A330neos, and a 737 MAX 8. So the sort of common theme here is fuel efficient next generation. And these are going to be leased out to airlines, obviously. It's apparently the logical strategic next step for us, according to Ted. He said that the transaction demonstrates Avilis's international expansion and its ability to originate both in the primary and secondary trading market. I know that sounds like I'm just saying words for the sake of saying words, but the next bit is the next bit is the interesting though, because it says with this acquisition, our aircraft portfolio will reach 45 aircraft on lease to airlines globally. So you know, this they're not a small fish anymore. 45 aircraft, that's kind of significant.
I think they'll be huge. You know that you're just going to say it, but yeah, that wealth fund is one of the richest entities on the planet. In fact, probably the richest.
Yeah, they have the backing of the wealth fund, so they've obviously got something to play with. But I know they're not, because you know there's this huge growth in Saudi Arabia with Riyadh Air and Ria.
That's the same thing, but there's Neom.
Neom, that's the other one.
The other airline. Talking about a third as well. I don't really know. There's no comment on what that's called yet, but yeah.
But yeah, no, I do understand. From my understanding, they are very keen to sort of not just be the lesser for Saudi Arabia. They do want to be more in. More global, and I think that's what they mean when they said like the aircraft are on lease to airlines globally. I would love to dig into it a bit more, and I think I might after the call now having chat about this. It's quite a new story, so I haven't really had the chance to sort of dig into it yet, but I did want to talk about it to see sort of what's going on there. So watch our website for more.
Definitely. Loads more news going on, of course, much more than we had time to talk about today. So as always, check out Simple Flying for more content on that. But I think we have about reached the conclusion for today's podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and welcome your feedback at editorial@simpleflying.com.
For more great content, you can visit our website at simpleflying.com or find us on social media. Simply search for Simple Flying.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please do leave us a rating on your favourite podcast player. Thanks for listening.
Bye.